Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Body Never Lies podcast. I'm your host, Leela Lutz, and today I am going solo. I'm going to take you through some of my knowledge and expertise. And I thought today we'd start with the thyroid and thyroid disease and issues because this is the thing that I deal with the most.
Welcome to The Body Never Lies. I'm your host, Leela Lutz. Each week, myself and experts from around the world help you uncover the secret ways your body communicates with you to empower you in your own individual health journey.
So you might, well, I actually had to go and look on the internet and see what the internet is saying about thyroid lately for the general person who's looking to see what I think I have a thyroid issue. What does having a thyroid issue look like and what are the symptoms? It has been updated since I looked 10 years ago, 20 years ago. It is giving a little bit better information. And so I thought I'd start with that and then we can expand on it to what I've actually seen with clients and what works in terms of restoring thyroid function and also further testing. I want to go through today the general testing that your GP will do, but further testing that we can do when we're working together or you can do at home and other tests that you might want to ask for. I want to start with a caveat though that some thyroid conditions are true thyroid conditions. Like some people genuinely have thyroid issues, but a lot of people actually have an induced hypo or hyperthyroid state from a lack of bioavailable energy. And that can be caused by environmental and nutritional influences. So it's really important when you're working with someone, or if you're listening to this and you're going to listen to all the symptoms, to actually ascertain whether the problem is either induced or a true thyroid issue. But in honesty, like that actually takes quite a bit of time. And it's taken me quite a few years to really accept that I have a true thyroid issue myself. And I have had a lot of clients come to me who have been able to get back to a normal physiological state. So whereas they were always told that they had a true thyroid issue. So it's really important what I'm going to share with you today about how to monitor and be proactive in this area yourself, because you have a lot of power in this area. So with the thyroid, what are the symptoms? Well, the major symptom that most people complain of is changes in weight. So weight gain, especially in hypothyroidism, weight gain without increasing your food, weight gain when you know that you don't eat very much at all, and weight loss unexpectedly. You might have swelling in the neck, which is where the thyroid gland is. You may not. Changes in your pulse, changes in your heart rate. I'm glad they actually listed that. Especially a low heart rate, it's what I'm seeing. But in some situations, you'll have elevated heart rate. Changes in energy or mood. Hair loss is a big one. I lost literally half a head of hair when I was really unwell. Feeling too cold or too hot. And sometimes you can be feeling hot on the inside, like having hot flushes and but still having cold hands and feet. And I think it's important to note here, when we're talking about hot flushes, is that a lot of hypothyroid issues are mistaken for menopause symptoms and or perimenopause symptoms. And so we can often not be helping women in the best way. Other symptoms of hyperthyroidism are dry skin, brittle nails, numbness or tingling in the hands, constipation, abnormal menstrual periods, challenges getting pregnant, or challenges not being able to sustain a fetus, so concurrent miscarriages, muscle weakness, trembling hands, vision problems, diarrhea, irregular menstrual periods. I will often see people flip between constipation and diarrhea, like just can't get their bowels to be straight. And I'm actually really happy that the internet here talks about the menopause issue. And I think a big one for, I'm not sure it came up on that list, but brain fog and trouble with your energy. Like you've just lost that zest for life. You just cannot get that excitement and drive into your life, which is really common menopause, perimenopause symptom as well. So what is the thyroid and what does it do? Before I go on to this, if you've had any of those symptoms, just hold on. Don't jump the gun yet. Let's keep talking and work it out before we start self-diagnosing. So the thyroid is actually in charge of the metabolism. So that's a pretty simple way to explain it. I'm trying to keep it really simple. The thyroid is a gland that sits in your neck and it's kind of shaped like a butterfly and it produces the hormones that control the speed of your metabolism. That's the simplest way to describe it. But in truth, thyroid hormone permeates every single cell in the body and it needs to get into each cell to for in order for us to have energy at the cell level. So it plays a super important role in metabolism. I wouldn't say it's the driver of metabolism completely in and of itself. But when you have a thyroid issue, it can slow down or rev up the metabolism. But I would say that there's an inverse relationship there. The metabolism, we can disrupt metabolic function and give ourselves pseudo thyroid issues. So yes, it's a little butterfly-shaped gland in your neck, and every single cell in our body is permeated by thyroid hormone, and every single organ in our body is made up of a conglomerate of cells. You were born from one cell that turned into two, that kept multiplying and multiplying, and every single one of those cells needs energy. We need to get ATP and adenosine triphosphate into every single one of those cells so that they can function. Now, that is dependent, the ability of getting that energy in is dependent on many functions, and thyroid is one of them. So, one of the things that will happen when you go to the doctor and you say, I think I have thyroid issue, is they will take a blood test. And they will, the gold standard in the Western world is to test for TSH, which is thyroid stimulating hormone. If your thyroid stimulating hormone is within or without of range, then they may order further testing. Unless you have a doctor who's willing to do further testing, that's generally how it goes. The TSH has to be out of balance. And the general understanding or the general kind of speculation with the TSH is if the TSH is too high, then the thyroid is underfunctioning. And if the TSH is too low, then the thyroid is overfunctioning. But what that is based on is assuming that the thyroid is taking up the thyroid stimulating hormone. So let me wind that back a little bit. Thyroid stimulating hormone is not actually a thyroid hormone. It is a hormone produced in the pituitary gland that sends a message to the thyroid on what to do. Now, when we test the blood, we can see what is in the blood, but what the information that we can never tell is whether that what we're testing is in the blood because there's a surplus, because the giver gave too much, or there's a surplus because the receiver was unable to take up the thyroid hormone. So we're making assumptions. We can't actually say that it's a whole truth to be so. So think of your thyroid, your blood system like a superhighway, and all of these cars are driving around the superhighway, van, little minivans, say. And so a minivan pulls into the pituitary gland, takes an order from the pituitary gland, and then drives it over to the thyroid. That's the TSH. And we can only test the minivan in transit. We can't test the minivan when he picks up, like, did he pick up the whole delivery? I'm saying he, just for the sake of it. Did he pick up the whole order, or was there not enough there? Then when he takes it over to the thyroid, did he drop off everything, or is there some left over? So we're making a huge assumption because we can only test the driver in transit, not what's going on at each of the warehouses, the pituitary and the thyroid. And this goes for any kind of function in the body, the heart, the liver. We can only test what's in transit in the bloodstream. So TSH for me is not enough information as to whether you have a thyroid issue or not. It just tells me maybe what the pituitary is doing, maybe what the thyroid is doing in terms of sending out enough and receiving, being able, the ability to receive. In states of hypothyroidism, it is really common for TSH to be suppressed. Sorry, let me rephrase that. In high states of stress, it is really common for TSH to be suppressed. And then often when we take the stress away, the TSH will rise and show us the true state of the thyroid. So I cannot tell you how many clients I have who go to the doctor. The doctor does a TSH and they say there's nothing wrong with your TSH. You don't have a thyroid issue. Yet they have pretty much every thyroid symptom on the list. I really challenge doctors, and you as a patient need to challenge your doctor and ask them to do a thyroid panel. So from the thyroid takes the TSH and then it makes T4. And so we need to test the active T4 and the unbound, bound and unbound, active, inactive, whichever form you, word you want to use, T4. And then from there, the T4 goes to the liver, and in the liver makes the conversion of T4 into T3. And so again, we need to test T3 and T4. But again, remembering that we are only testing what's being transported along the highway, and we're using all of this as clues to try and make up the full picture. Then we also want to test reverse T3. What is happening with the T3? Is it being used, or is it being converted into reverse T3? Another thing that we want to test is the thyroid antibodies, because sometimes the body can have a problem with the thyroid and be attacking the thyroid. Now, this is called Hashimoto's disease, and it's an autoimmune condition. It's not necessarily a problem with the thyroid. The problem is somewhere else in the body, and its response is to attack the thyroid. So it may or may not be the best course of action to treat the person with Hashimoto's with thyroid medication. Well, it can help, but it's not getting to the true root cause of the issue, because they're treating the thyroid and not the body that's attacking the thyroid. So many things to digest there, many things. But if you are going to your doctor and you want your thyroid tested properly, you need a full thyroid panel. So I have had many, many clients who've had a perfectly normal TSH, and then they'll come back with we'll get a full panel done, and there'll be challenges in the rest of the panel. The other things that we need to look at with thyroid is cholesterol. Broda Barnes showed that elevated LDL cholesterol was present in hypothyroidism. And in hypothyroidism, the LDL receptor and liver function are impaired, and thus the liver cannot regulate cholesterol in hypothyroidism. So cholesterol is one of the most, you know, zoned in thing on blood tests. It is crazy how many people tell me they've got high cholesterol and they have no idea why they have high cholesterol. My mum actually called me and said that she's got really high cholesterol and her doctor wants to put her on a statin. If you have high cholesterol, I challenge your doctor and ask for a calcium score, because just because you have high cholesterol does not mean that you have high amounts of plaque on your arteries. And a statin's job is to treat the plaque on the arteries. So it is really important to differentiate the two, not just take a statin for no reason, because there are a lot of implications for taking statins, a lot of side effects. And I'm not, this is, by the way, this is not medical advice. You need to have a chat with your doctor, but it's important to be aware of these issues. The high cholesterol can be a low thyroid state. An iron panel is really important. Low iron on a blood panel is more indicative of low thyroid, vitamin A deficiency, low copper, and cell stress. And so a true picture must be determined by ferritin, transferritin percentage, and total iron binding capacity. So in thyroid, low levels of iron and ferritin are normal, whereas total iron binding capacity will be elevated. So again, this is another thing where we treat something where it could be something else. So we really need to look at all these things in conjunction. Another thing I want to have a look at is the red blood cell count, because decreased red blood cells, hemoglobin and hemocrit, are all common hypothyroidism, also increased red distribution width. I want to have a look at prolactin, because we can't test estrogen because, well, we can, but I find the tests are often inconclusive, because like iron, estrogen can actually get trapped in the body. So it comes back to that superhighway thing, right? Like we test iron, we don't see it being driven around in the bloodstream. It doesn't mean that it's not there. It might be trapped somewhere in the body. The same goes for estrogen. It is really known, and I encourage you to have a look at Ray Peet's work on estrogen, that it can be trapped in the tissues. And estrogen is very well known to suppress thyroid hormone. So if it's trapped in the hormone, trapped in the tissue, and we can't pick it up on an estrogen test itself, there could be, for instance, an excess amount of prolactin, which is what can stimulate high estrogen production. And this is really important coming back to that whole perimenopause issue as well with these hormones. And there's quite a long list of things that I look at in a blood test. It's probably too much to go into now, but these are other things that I'd be questioning my doctor. Okay, can we have a conversation about this? This doesn't really sit that well with me. And, you know, once upon a time, you used to be able to just go to our GP and trust them with everything. Now I really feel like the system isn't set up for them to support you in the way that they used to be able to support you. And we really need to learn to advocate for ourselves in our situations. Like, I would never have got better if I had not really stood up and advocated for myself with all the specialists that I've had to see. And I'm not making any negative comments towards doctors. Medicine in some ways has saved my life, and it's very important, but it's also very limited in its solutions, because it's about medicine and not necessarily all the lifestyle changes that you need to make. And to be fair, like, the study of medicine is massive. Like, you can't possibly know everything that you need to know. None of us can. And we have to have some patience and some compassion for doctors in, you know, how much they have to know, how many people they see on a day-to-day basis, like all of the things. We need to have some compassion for them. So I really think it's important to learn to advocate yourself and ask questions and ask your doctor to get more curious about you and see what their response is when you ask them to do so. Anyway, moving on, I want to talk about how I assess thyroid with my clients, because blood tests have such limitations. So once upon a time, the actual standard to test thyroid was using basal body temperature. This was a tried and tested measure of testing the thyroid. And I have challenged doctors with it today, and anyone has ever said to me is, that is such an old-fashioned way of testing the thyroid. No one's actually ever challenged me about it being right or wrong. One of my doctors that I work with said, I can't believe you actually get clients to do this. I'm like, but it's so informative and gives you so much data, they're actually really motivated to do it, to be honest. So I want you to think of a cabin in the woods and it is freezing. It's snowing outside and you've been outside in this cabin, outside in the woods, and you stumble across this cabin. You're like, I'm going to go in here and get warm. And inside you, there's a fireplace right in the center of the room. So you close the door and you light a fire. Now, if you have enough wood, so first of all, you need to gently start the fire, right? Like you can't just start a fire with a massive log. You need kindling, and then you need to slowly add bigger pieces of wood to the fire, right? So that's one important thing to remember. Now, if you can get a good fire going, it will heat up the whole cabin and the whole cabin will be warm. If you only have kindling and you have to just put up with that, you'll have to lie right next to the fire to keep warm, okay? So I want you to think of like this. This is your body and the fire is your metabolism. So if this fire has only kindling on it and you're really cold, the next best thing for you to do is go around the room and start getting the furniture and breaking it down and using it as firewood. And this is what happens in a low energy availability or a low thyroid state. But what you know is that there's not enough furniture to last you for a very long time. So you're just going to do it teeny, teeny bits at a time. And you're just going to keep the fire very small. So what happens in this state is the outside is very cold because there's not enough energy to get to the outside. And what we can think of with our bodies is people who have low thyroid, low energy availability, when they take their armpit temperature, it is very low. So normal temperature is 36.7 degrees, 98. I think that's 98. I should have checked this before. I can't remember with my American clients. High 98s. And what happens is when we test our armpit temperature and it's below that, like I have some clients who've had like 34s, a lot of 35s. What that tells me is there's not enough heat to run all the systems of the body. There's not enough energy. And this is where you will see function starts to decline because the body needs to break down itself to make fuel. And it needs to sacrifice systems so that it doesn't use up too much fuel. So it might say, well, the last thing we want is for you to get pregnant. So we're going to stop enabling that to happen. We'll suppress ovulation. And that'll save a whole bunch of energy as well. You'll also notice, you know, you have really cold hands, cold feet, cold nose. Like, have you ever touched your nose and gone, oh my God, my nose is so cold. Like, I'm warm, but my nose is freezing. That is a classic sign of this low energy availability. Now, what you can see with some people is that they will all of a sudden get this massive log and get so excited and throw it on the fire, and that can actually put the fire out. And this is really someone who has low energy availability, and then they eat a big meal and or they eat something and it makes them feel worse afterwards because the system was unable to deal with the input coming in. So I really like this model of the wood cabin and body temperature. It's really important to note that your brain requires so much more energy than your torso. Your brain is the most important organ in your body. And I've seen a lot of people make the mistake, just because they didn't know, taking their oral temperature and saying, oh, I'm fine, it's always 36, 37. When in fact, then they test their armpit temperature and their armpit temperature is like 2 degrees lower. The difference between your oral temperature and your armpit temperature should be like 0.1, 0.2 of a degree. And so this is really helpful in assessing thyroid function as well. And often if I see someone with a super high, not super high, but the oral temperature is a little bit higher than normal as well, I know, but the body temperature is super cold, I know there's like a little bit of adrenaline trying to keep this brain going, right? So there's a few different things that we can get from looking at the oral and the armpit temperature against each other. Now, when you eat, you should see a rise in temperature of like 0.1, 0.2 degree, because that means that the fire's been stoked and there's more energy burning. We shouldn't see it go down after eating. The same with exercise, we should get a little bit warmer. And sometimes when we do an induce a stress, though, it is normal to see the temperature drop down a little bit. But what we want to see is that it comes back up to normal in the next 24 hours, 48 hours. And so when we take body temperature and pulse, it's really important to take it against a food log over a consecutive number of days, taking into account the exercise and the stresses and all the things going into someone's life. Because now what I'm starting to see with people is they'll try and chase the numbers, right? So they'll eat a meal and test, and then they'll go, well, I didn't get a warm temperature, so the next meal I'm going to add this and test and see if they can get warmer. It actually is a build-up of stress over time, the numbers. So we can't just change it meal by meal. But you can definitely see in someone, if they eat the same breakfast every day and then you change it to something else and the temperatures improve, you can see more, use that data as more helpful. So this is a really great tool for measuring energy availability and thyroid function, because a thermometer is like $10 at the pharmacy and you just get two of them and keep one for your mouth and one for your armpit. I like to put a bit of tape on my armpit one. I don't necessarily want the armpit one going in my mouth by accident. And you take your oral temperature and your armpit temperature along with your pulse, which we'll talk about in a second, upon rising 60 minutes after breakfast and 60 minutes after lunch. And if you want my temperature and pulse guide, I will set up a way for you to get that on my website. Actually, that's a really good idea. And so when we look at the pulse is really important because thyroid has a major job in controlling the electron transport chain. And so it controls all of the contractile and relax actions of all the muscles in your body, including your heart. And so it may slow down your heart rate or speed up your heart rate for various reasons.
If you've been enjoying all the episodes of The Body Never Lies, but you're wondering, Leela, where do I even start with implementing all these great things that I'm learning? Well, I've created something just for you, and I'm so passionate about you getting access to it that I am giving it away for free. The Body Never Lies Insights course helps women over 35 who are sick of all the tests with no answers uncover the root cause of their long list of unexplained symptoms with a scientifically proven self-assessment tool. Over four live workshops, I'm going to take you through the assessment that I take every single client through to help them establish where they are truly at with their health. The assessment includes all the things that their doctor and quite a lot of other practitioners, to be honest, have never asked them, and will leave you feeling 100% certain that no, it is not all in your head. Your body never lies. Whether you've been eating clean and self-researching for years, maybe you're sick of giving up all of the different food groups, maybe you've tried a few pro-metabolic approaches and it's made you worse, or even if you've just arrived at a crossroads of knowing you need to do something different for your health and you don't know where to start, this assessment tool is for you. If you want to get this for free, and I probably won't do this again, then head over to thebodyneverlies.com.au and register now. We are starting on January 15, so you can make 2025 your best year yet. Of course, places are limited, so make sure you get in because it is first in, best dressed.
So it's really important to note here because the low heart rate is viewed by some people as a sign of fitness. This needs to be looked at in context. It comes from the belief that your body pumps a lot of blood using less beats, basically. So it says those, so people think it's strong, so it's actually pumping a lot of blood with less beats, but it can in fact be pumping less blood with low beats as well, which is a low thyroid state. So it's really important to have the context here, right? And in states of low energy availability, so say for instance, endurance runners, this is really well known as well, is that when you are an endurance runner, you become really good at being able to go through pain, and one of them, being including hunger and pushing through an event. And what the body does in those situations is actually slow down the metabolism to conserve energy. So even in an athlete, I need to check whether the low heart rate is due to a fitness adaptation or a stress adaptation. So really important to check on those. And we have to be careful when we say, oh, it's normal, like as we age, it's normal for our heart rate to climb. Well, as we age, our thyroid hormone function declines. And also, I notice people who get older, they don't eat very much. And often that's because they're not doing very much, they're not moving around very much, they get lose the inclination to make themselves food, or there are all these other reasons before we make a comment or a diagnosis on something. It's really important. So your heart rate should be between 70 and 85 beats per minute. Yes, if you are, I think I was talking about it with Libby Westcombe, and her resting heart rate is in the 60s. But then she's very good at tracking her heart rate during exercise, and she's still able to get a normal response with her heart and exercise. And that's something really important to track with people as well. Some people have a low resting heart rate, and then they'll do exercise and their heart rate stays elevated for too long. Some people just can't get their heart rate to rise in exercise either, and that's not necessarily a fitness adaptation. There's nuance and context, but for general population, if you're not an athlete, I'd be saying that your heart rate should be between 70 and 85. And even if you are, an endurance runner or doing a lot of exercise, I would still put that as the norm. So they're two easy things that you can assess yourself. So with my clients, I set up a template for them in Chronometer, so they have a place to enter their temperature and pulse throughout the day. And they get a spreadsheet which graphs their temperature and pulse over the period of time that we're working together. The graph I really like because, sometimes you're talking about changes of 0.1 to 0.2 of a degree. And that is like so tiny, it's hard to notice when you're looking at it in the digital form, like number form. But when you put it on the graph and you can really see the trends. Of course, what we also want to see is that there's a change in the menstrual cycle. So, and this is also something to note that it changes in the menstrual cycle. So, in a true healthy menstrual cycle, when you ovulate, and this is something I'd be using to track my thyroid health as well, is making sure you truly ovulate. So when you get your period, your temperature will be at its highest point, and it will slowly, slowly, slowly drop off. And then it'll be at its lowest point when you ovulate. And then after ovulation, it will jump back up again and start climbing back up again. And there's quite a significant drop and jump that you can actually see whether you have ovulated or not. And the most important part of ovulation is making progesterone. And being able to make progesterone is dependent on thyroid hormone. So not only are we wanting to make sure we ovulate, but we're wanting to make sure that the temperature keeps rising until the menstrual bleed to make sure that we have in fact made enough progesterone as well. So you can ovulate and not make enough progesterone, but you can also not ovulate at all. And so that's really important to differentiate. And I'll find that women will always say to me, oh, I have great periods, I ovulate. And I'm like, well, how do you know you do? And you really need to track that before you say that you do. It's really important to note too that ovulation is how we make our hormones. And it's not something that we just want to do when we're trying to get pregnant. We want to be doing it every month for as long as we possibly can. So tracking your menstrual cycle is another way to track your thyroid. Other symptoms of low thyroid too are sleep issues. Waking up in the middle of the night to pee is a very common thyroid issue. It also can be, obviously, as well from drinking too much water and sodium loss from stress. So we need to check if that's not those two things, but it's really common to have challenges with sleep in thyroid states. The biggest one that I see as well is constipation. When you go to your doctor and you say to your doctor, I only poo once a week, and he or she says to you, that's normal, it's not. It's really common and it's getting more and more common because of the more processed food and the more low energy availability people have, but it is not normal. You should move stool every day. You should move stool more than once a day. And especially if you're eating like as much food as I am, I would expect you to have two or three bowel movements a day. It is not normal. It's just common. And I think that's a really good phrase to remember when you go to see your doctor. It is not always normal, but it might be very common to them to see that. So addressing thyroid issues. So if I was to have someone come and work with me, we're testing temperature and pulse over a period of time with their food log. But also what I'm looking at in their food log is, are they meeting their energetic needs? Are they eating enough protein? Are they eating enough carbohydrate? Are they eating enough fat or too much fat? Too much fat can slow down your thyroid. Too much fat can elevate your estrogen really high, which can affect your thyroid. Too little carbohydrate. Well, to make the conversion from T4 to T3 in the liver, we need carbohydrate. Your liver cannot function without carbohydrate. And the liver needs to also clear cholesterol. It has so many other functions, but we need a significant amount of carbohydrate for that. Yes, it is true. If you don't eat carbohydrates, your body will make them itself, but it doesn't make as many as you need to eat because it's not going to. The way that it makes them itself is by breaking down itself. It mobilizes a whole bunch of stress hormones and it breaks down its own tissue to get the glycogen out of the muscles. It breaks itself down to make carbohydrate. So you can actually give yourself a thyroid problem from not eating enough carbohydrate. One, because you can't make the conversion because there's not enough carbohydrate to do it. But also because your metabolism will slow down to protect yourself. And so you can look like you have a thyroid issue in your temperature and pulse, et cetera. Another issue with thyroid is low protein, but also too much protein. Too much protein relative to carbohydrates. So if you, that one's a little bit more difficult to explain, but with the food logging, I'm looking at, are you meeting your energetic needs? And sometimes people simply can't eat as much as they need to, or they put on quite a lot of weight. And they might think they have a thyroid issue, but quite often what happens is people just diet so many times. And every time you diet, you have what's called a metabolic slowdown. And if the diet is not done in a really structured and healthy way, your body goes into a preservation mode, slows down the amount of food and energy that you used to perform everyday functions. And this compensatory mechanism means that when you go back to eating normal food, your metabolic rate has lowered. And so now you're actually in a caloric surplus for your body and you put on weight. And I've seen this happen with people who are eating as little as 1400, 1500 calories and they're putting on weight eating that. So something I always check is, what is the person's output and how many calories do they need on a day-to-day basis? You can do this yourself. You can go to the TDEE net calculator, put in your height, your body weight, and it will tell you how many calories you should be eating, what your weight should be. And this is another one, actually, because I've worked with a lot of people who are really lean and have a lot of health issues. And they will tell me that they eat tons of food. And yes, they might be eating all the time, but they're eating really like low density foods in terms of calories. Or they eat quite a lot of fat. So they feel like they're full and satiated because fat makes you feel very satiated and that puts them into a caloric deficit. So these people swear black and blue that they eat all the time. But what they do is they don't eat enough. And the reason they're able to sustain their low body weight is because their body's constantly eating itself to make fuel. Now we know in states of pseudo starvation, from things like the Minnesota starvation experiment, low calories, these men were just on 1700 calories, which is just pretty much a standard diet, not even really starvation. Even our organs shrink in size. So the liver shrinks like 60% in size. So you're going to get low body weight just from all of your organs shrinking. Now, if you think about how important the liver is in thyroid function, and that it shrinks like 60% in size when we don't eat enough food, how is it going to be able to perform all its functions when it's so small? So you could have a low thyroid or a low energy availability state presenting itself as a low thyroid state from the mere fact that you have spent so many years dieting, or so many years cutting out major food groups, or you're just one of those people who constantly skip meals because you're very busy, you know, a bit of an adrenaline junkie, or you're one of those people that gets really stressed, and when you're stressed, you can't eat. We can actually cause ourselves to have these low energy availability and thyroid issues. So when we do an assessment of someone, I have to assess their current lifestyle, their health history, how much food they eat, what types of food they eat. Another thing that can happen as well is that people just think calories in, calories out, but calories need to actually be full of minerals. They need to be dense in vitamins and minerals, and minerals are so key to thyroid function. We can eat calorically dense food that is completely devoid of vitamins and minerals and give ourselves health issues from the lack of nutrition. Like, it is amazing how many people, especially in places like America, people are actually nutritionally starving, yet they're obese and eating, you know, thousands and thousands of calories a day. Our health is, and our energy and our metabolism is dependent on the minerals in the food. The body takes the food, and provided there is enough nutrition and enough minerals there, it can take that food and turn it into energy. It doesn't just turn food into energy. We know that because all of these people who eat McDonald's and things, even if they eat the same amount of calories, even if they stay within their caloric intake, they put on fat because that body is, that food is not being turned into energy. It's just being stored as fat. And unfortunately, because there's no energy in this food, they just keep needing to eat more and more and more. And this is what's is really, you know, the obesity epidemic is just food that is completely devoid of nutrition and leaves you so unsatisfied that you have to keep eating more and more and more of it. And so you're putting on fat mass because you're unable to make energy. And so you're just storing all the calories as food. Plus, on top of that, you are eating an excess of calories because you can't stop eating. So we can also cause a thyroid state by exercising too much, and exercising too much on top of eating too little. And this is why it's so important to assess what people are doing with their training and also their food in conjunction with each other. So as a general rule, a person needs 45 calories per kilo of lean mass as a minimum. So I have 51 kilos of lean mass, so that's about 2,300 calories, plus on top of that, all the exercise that I do. So my calorie requirements come in at around 2,500 to 2,800 calories. I track all of my output on Chronometer, and it's pretty consistent. It's between 2,500 and 2,800 calories of output. Now, I know I'm overweight. You've all seen me on Instagram. I have an excess amount of body fat. I sit at 30% body fat. However, and I see this all the time, people sitting with 37% body fat, but they've undereaten for a very long period of time. It's not always the right time to lose weight. We have to make sure that everything is functioning first before we can go into a caloric deficit. So a caloric deficit is a stress on the system. And anytime there's a stress, the body can perceive that as really dangerous and make an adaptation where it slows down the metabolism. So when you are, like myself, needing to lose weight, before you go into a diet phase, you want to make sure that you are eating enough calories, that you consistently eat that 45 calories per kilo of body weight or more, depending on your output. So I'm going to talk about this in my next episode about why I'm not doing anything about that 10 kilos of fat that I'd like to lose at the moment. But, you know, it really is in preservation of my thyroid and having had thyroid issues for such a long period of time. I can tell you personally that I've done a lot of work on myself, and this is a really important part of it as well. I grew up in a very traumatic environment. I've really learnt from also working enough on my stuff to be able to listen to my mother's stories without being triggered by it or feeling like I was taking on her stuff. I've got to a point now where I can really listen to stories of her life and where she came from. And there's generations of abuse in my family. There's generations of food and scarcity and challenges with food, you know, being something that you can deserve to eat, that you're, you know, that it's not something that's a privilege to eat. So I've had a long history of undereating, and it's not been from dieting. It's just been simply from when I was growing up. For example, I'm the daughter of a single mother with two children. We grew up on government support. We didn't have enough money to eat the amount of food that I needed to eat for all the sport that I was doing and everything like that. So my thyroid issues started when I was a child. I remember always being hungry, but getting in trouble for asking for more food and being told that I was being greedy and that there are so many children in the world that don't have food. And this comes, you know, my mum was doing the best with the resources that she had. It comes from a place of not actually being able to afford more food. And it also comes from a place of she actually grew up with starving people around her and did see firsthand what people go through on a day-to-day basis. She has a lot of guilt about having, you know, what we had. So that started a very long time ago. Then I went through leaving home at 17, and I became very determined. Well, I was all through my high school years. I became very determined to change my situation, and I became a very high achiever, which is a very typical pattern of an older daughter, firstborn being a daughter. I took care of everybody else in my family before myself, and I became a very high achiever. And I worked myself to the bone in my 20s, setting up my business, studying, moving out of home when I was 17, working two or three jobs to get through university, all that kind of stuff. And I would be able to run on a crazy amount of adrenaline, and I would never stop to eat enough. And there were times when I was a uni student as well, and I used to just eat vegetarian and Hare Krishnas at lunchtime because it was so cheap. And, you know, there's a lot of not eating enough food that went on in my life. And then when I did my nutrition studies, it really focused on weight loss. Everything focuses on weight loss. And I'm so glad a personal trainer actually said that to a client the other day. I don't actually know how to do anything other than weight loss. There's this assumption that the only people that need nutrition coaching are people who need to lose weight. And I never needed to lose weight. I was always so skinny, I actually needed to put on weight. So I never really paid enough attention to how much food you should eat, because it was all focused on reducing calories. And I always thought that food logging was about reducing calories, and I didn't need to do that. So it took me a really long time to realize, even when I was really fit and I was training But I've never eaten enough food. Never have I eaten enough food in my life until I was in my mid-30s. And there's a lot of trauma that goes along with that, a lot of negative beliefs, a lot of workaholic, adrenaline junkie, overachieving behavior that I've had to work through with coaching and journaling and various kinds of things to overcome. And I bring this up because they are all the things that contribute to my thyroid issue, right? It's not just the food in and of itself. And these are the things that I work on with clients. How do we calm down our nervous system? How do we get out of fight or flight? How do we accept, you know, that we need to eat for more food? A lot of women I work with who are very lean, we need to do a lot of work on, you know, not being attached to a certain body image or a certain weight on the scale, because it's 5-10 kilos too little than what they need to be to achieve health. There's a lot of emotional stuff and other stuff that goes along with thyroid health. So we need to work on all those things. We need to work on the food things. There is, of course, the environmental things. There are so many endocrine disruptors in our cleaning products, our skincare, our detergents, you know, our washing liquids. And pollution is a huge one as well. Something that really set off my thyroid issues was mold, and I had mold illness for a while. I had another flare up when there was a huge season of bushfires in Australia, and the smoke all got trapped in the area where I lived. I had a huge response to that. And Tomo, I've had on the podcast before, Keith Littlewood, he did his PhD on pollution and its effect on thyroid. So his master's thesis in endocrinology. And one of the things that came up was brake dust. Like, I live in the city, just the brake dust everywhere. Now, I'm not saying you have to move out of the city. I live right in the city and I love it. And I'm not going to move. But it's understanding that all of these things affect our system and contribute to thyroid issues. And a lot of it is making yourself robust enough to be able to withstand the stress of those things. I don't think you have to move out of the city. I love living in the city. I'm not moving out of the city. So they're all just things to think about. Now, with thyroid hormone, I will mention, again, I'm not a doctor, so you need to consult with a doctor about these things, but the research on the general prescription for thyroid hormone in Western countries, generally people prescribe thyroxine. That can make your blood tests look better, but it doesn't mean you actually feel better. And the efficacy of that particular drug is only about 20%. If you don't have the right nutrition and you get thyroid hormone, whether it's natural thyroid hormone, thyroxine, thyroid, or you're getting pure T4, pure T3, whatever it is, if you do not have the nutritional foundation to take that thyroid hormone and utilize it, you're not going to have the best response with that. That's really important to understand. There's plenty of people in the Repeat forum and on the internet talking about how they're taking thyroid hormone and this, that, and the other, and they're having this and that other problem, but they're not working on the foundation principles. It's really easy to buy thyroid hormone on the internet. Don't go and do that until you've established the foundational principles. Yes, thyroid hormone can work really well for people. I really challenged the idea of thyroxine. It didn't work for me. I personally need T3, and I've had many clients that need T3. There's a great blog post on Keith Littlewood's website, balancebody.mind, on T3. He's a massive advocate of T3, and he's actually doing his PhD, studying T3 a lot. There's a lot of research in it being helpful with cancer tumors and all so many things. I encourage you to go and research. I'm not saying go and take T3. I just really want people to question, especially because I have so many people come to me and say, oh, I take thyroxine and it doesn't make me feel better. Like, my bloods look better, but I'm still don't poo and I still can't sleep and I still can't eat any carbs because they make me fat. That's not a solution. And you are within your rights to say to your doctor, I know my blood test look better, but I still feel like crap. Okay. I had a client work with me. She'd been on thyroxine for 20 years for her Hashimoto's. 20 years of being constipated and having fatigue and brain fog. And now she's losing weight and she's in She's doing amazingly well, and she has changed from thyroxine to something else. But more importantly, she's eating a lot more food now. She's eating a lot of carbohydrate, and she's training and all these other things. She's really changed her whole life. And she was finding it really frustrating because she would go to a doctor and say, "But I still can't poo. Like, how can this just be my life? How can I be better? How can you say that I'm better when I can't poo? I just really want to poo." And most of you listening can relate to how good it feels to have a good poo. Like, that's a normal part of life and something we should all be able to do every day. So, on that note, I'm going to love and leave you. I hope this gives you an insight into thyroid issues. And I want to remind you that it's really important to ascertain, is it a true thyroid issue, or is it a thyroid issue that is induced by a low energy availability state? Don't go out and take thyroid hormone willy-nilly. It's a process. It requires a lot of guidance and nuance. But I will say, like, the most wonderful thing about taking your body temperature and pulse and graphing it every day is that you have an immediate response. You can see straight away whether something is working or not, or making a difference. And it's really important to take these assessments because normally, when you do work with a doctor, the only tool that they have is the blood test. And so you have to wait 6 weeks for a blood test. Well, I can tell you one thyroid hormone I took, within 2 days, I felt absolutely awful. And it was one of the worst things that I've ever done, is take that. And my doctor sent me off for more tests. And I was like, but I need to stop taking this. It's literally making me worse. Anyway, we can't wait for 6 weeks for blood tests. We need something that we can do every day. So taking your temperature and pulse, but also learning how to log really well and get all that feedback, and learning how to measure all the other signs, learning how to fuel yourself for good thyroid function, all of those things can help you really take the power back and, really be the person that, tunes into your body. The body never lies. Tune into your body, learn how to read it, learn how to work with it, learn how to fuel it, and take your power back, get your energy back. Get your vitality back, get your period back, get your hair back, get your nails back, have it all back. That's what I really hope for you. So I hope you've really enjoyed this episode. I would love, 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 if you haven't already, if you would subscribe, rate, and review this podcast. It really helps me get the podcast up in the charts, which helps me get better and better guests for you guys. And I would love it if you share on Instagram and or DM me at Leila Lutz on Instagram any takeaways that you have, and also give me your honest feedback. This is my first solo podcast. I would love to know if you liked it, what you would like to hear about more, all of those things. I'm open to it. I would love for you to give me some guidance and some feedback on it, because I'm doing this show for you, to inspire you to tune into your body and take control of your health. So I will love you and leave you, and I'll see you again here with you, be with you, chat with you. What would I say? In a couple of weeks. And we'll be talking about why I am not doing a fat loss phase and whether or not you should be doing a fat loss phase too. Bye for now.
I'm Leila Lutz, and you've been listening to The Body Never Lies. If you haven't yet, please go to your favorite podcast app and subscribe, rate, and review this podcast. All the resources and references from this episode are waiting for you on my website, leilalutz.com. Just click on podcast and look for this episode. Now join me next week for another episode of The Body Never Lies. Thank you so much for listening.